Stop stereotyping. Just see everybody individually. Here's how you know you're stereotyping. If you start a sentence off with all baby boomers are, you just lie because you've not met every single baby boomer in the world. Just stop it and just see people individually.
Welcome to the Learn It All podcast with your hosts, Learn It CEO, Damon Lemby, and SVP of Product, Darren Bridget. Our mission is to explore how continuous growth shapes the path to success. Our guests are high achievers who've learned there's always something new to discover. They'll share their stories, strategies, and insights with you. So whether you're a budding entrepreneur, a seasoned executive, an aspiring athlete, or simply someone who believes in the lifelong pursuit of knowledge, this podcast is for you. Join us now for the latest episode as we continue the Learn It All's journey through a world that never stops teaching.
Hello and welcome to the Learn It All podcast. If you are a fan of getting things done, getting out there, making some noise in the world, making things happen, then I am going to challenge you with our guest today, who is self-proclaimed, one-word definition, action-oriented, Dr. Michelle Robertson, knows how to get things done, especially in the talent development space. We are Courtney Ritchie today and Darren Bridget, joined by Dr. Michelle Robertson. Hello and welcome.
Hi. Thank you. Hi. Thank you for having me.
Welcome.
Thanks so much for being here. We had a really fun conversation getting started. Let's get into it by having you tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself and your background and things like that.
Absolutely. So Darren, Courtney, thank you so much. I love the pre-show dialogue and made me feel very welcome and relaxed. So professionally, my background really started with corporate training. I worked at a corporate training center that was based out of Louisiana, and I facilitated professional development courses, a plethora of things, conflict resolution, interpersonal communication skills, email etiquette, business etiquette, you name it, we trained it. And I also became a Microsoft Office specialist in that job. So I taught Microsoft Word application courses and PowerPoint, all those things. And it's corporate training. Companies that did not have an internal talent development team would outsource their training function to my organization. So Monday through Friday from 8 to 5, we were teaching 8-hour training classes to adults from any industry. So in any class could be somebody who worked in the oil and gas industry or nonprofit or healthcare. And so from there, I really had an itch to get into some internal roles because the problem was I was training these folks, having a great time with them all day, but I could not follow their learning journeys. Did they apply the tools that I taught? Mm. Did their leaders touch base with them after the training to see how effective or ineffective it was? What's happening? And so that's when I started getting into industry specific talent development roles. So from there, I went to healthcare. From there, I went to a VP role in talent development in banking. And then from there, I went to a VP of student services role in higher ed. And mind you, I have never had any experience in those areas. Didn't grow up in healthcare, didn't grow up in banking, and didn't grow up in higher ed. But what I've learned about the talent development industry is that it is so universal. We can exist in any industry and in any space. We just need to learn the language, the compliance language, the language of the industry. But everybody needs leadership and professional development. And so that's kind of how those were kind of my last three corporate experiences that really led to me being on my own. And I knew that was always going to be the dream, the vision, to have my own talent development firm where I was working with the clients of my choice and doing the work of my choice. And so professionally, that's how I did all of that. Personally, I am a binger. I love binge watching TV. I binge like nobody's business, okay? And I just have to give Darren and Courtney, just bear with me. I have to give you an example of how extreme the binging really is. Are you ready?
I am ready. Well, let's hear it.
Okay, here we go. For the longest, I said, man, I really want to get into Chicago PD. I watch all the Law and Orders. Well, really SVU, organized crime. You know, I think I'm an NYPD detective. But this Chicago thing, I was like, man, what is this? Dick Wolf has a new series. I don't watch Chicago Fire, Chicago Med. I want to watch Chicago PD. And then so one day I said, how many seasons exist? Well, 11 seasons, about 20 episodes at 45 minutes per episode. I started watching that in April. 11 seasons. I am all caught up today. I'm done. I am done.
That's
I am waiting for the fall.
Yeah.
For the brand new show. That's how I exhale and unwind a good show.
That's commitment and action oriented.
Did you ever watch CSI shows?
Yes. I started to. I just didn't keep that one going.
Do you know Gary Dordon from one of those CSI shows?
I don't know if I know the name, but I might know the character.
Gary, really good looking black guy with green eyes who was in like the first CSI show.
Yes.
So I was an actor for 20 years before I transitioned into this business. And one of my kind of nice little film roles I had was a very independent film that never really got finished quite right. He's terrific in it. He's playing the role of George Jackson from Soledad Brother. And so based on the Black Gorilla family and what happened at San Quentin back in the 70s. Wow. And he was really cool. I really enjoyed working with him.
Whoa. And he's a looker.
He is, and I think he still is. If I still see him popping up on social media. He definitely is.
Yeah. I used to love CSI, but it's truly how I unwind, whether it's Bridgerton, whether it's catching up on SVU. I love all things British Monarch. My dad as well. I've seen everybody play King Henry VIII and Queen Elizabeth. I've seen it all. I love it. And that's me personally, but I'm a lover of all things, people, training, TV, movies, all the things.
You and I have the same viewing taste. Everything you've mentioned, I have been binge watched everything. So, and yes, all the Elizabeths.
Yes.
Any film of adaptation of that story, I'm in.
I'm in.
So then here's a question, because you have, on top of doctor, you have CPTD,
yes,
MCCT,
yes,
MOS. I think you're just making them up at this point. How do you stay current with those kind of certifications? And because a lot of our listeners are in the same space, what's your advice to those about being selective about which ones to go after and which ones to just not create the space for now?
That's so good. How I stay relevant, truly shameless plug for LinkedIn. They are not paying me to give them a plug, but I live on LinkedIn. And that's how I actually learned about the MCCT certification, which is Modern Classroom Certified Trainer. It was during COVID. Logical Operations is the vendor for that. And they were running this special. It was $95 to sit for the certification. They gave the training and they gave a huge reduced price and you could take the test. I would have never found out about that other than LinkedIn. And what I typically do, Courtney, is when I see someone make a post saying, I have a new certification, I will always click to explore. Well, what is this? And I'm such a nerd. I am going to find who the governing, the authority, whoever the authority is on this certification. I'm going to Google it. I'm going to research it, read the about us, read what it takes, read why it exists. And I instantly run it against some invisible standards of interest. So if it is something that I know that is not in my career path, it's not a product or a service that I offer, it's not anything I'm interested, it is immediately out of my head. But if it is something where I'm like, ooh, something related to facilitation, well, that's a value of mine. That's an interest of mine. And then I'll go and I might read into it. Do I need it? Do I need it to attract more clients? Do I need it for my next internal role if I was interested in working internally? Do I need it for credibility's sake? And if it's a no, then I'm not going to pursue it. So I think it's important if you're listening to kind of create a criteria for what you pursue, because if you don't, you're going to chase the Joneses. You're going to go after everything everyone else does. And it's not even a passion of yours to have that certification. So because I feel like I've reached the pinnacle of credibility for this stage of my life, I typically don't go and research any more certifications. There's two I know I've always wanted that I don't currently possess, but I am not gung-ho about going to get it right now. I don't need it right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is one of the things that you do currently. So currently you're the CEO of your own business and you're getting out there doing keynote speaking, you're doing consulting, you're doing facilitation. Yeah. And of course, along the way, you're still designing programs and stuff for people. And I certainly want to get into that too, because I mean, you know, you're talking about 8 to 5 corporate training and then, you know, what goes into that. And that's certainly what we do.
Yeah.
But just to follow up on this, because I think a lot of people might be out there collecting certifications, but it's not translating into mm-hmm. work. Like how important are they?
I think certifications are more valuable than degrees. Mm-hmm. And I make sure I let my students know. I just finished my first adjunct stint at LSU. I was teaching an entry-level research class to master and doctoral students in person one day a week. It's a 3-hour night class. And man, I haven't been back in the class as a student on campus in years. And so when I would hear them speak about thinking that the degree was the pinnacle, and I would go, oh, no. You know, one of my students said, you know, Dr. Rob, when I get my PhD from LSU and I get my role as a director of HR, and I said, director of what? With no work experience, you believe you're going to compete with Barbara, who's been doing HR for 32 years. And she has an SPHR from HRCI. She has the SHRM cert. She has experience in compensation and leave and total rewards. And you don't even know what those phrases mean. And you believe just because you have PhD behind your name that that's going to do it. And I was like, it's good. Obviously, I'm a big fan of education, except it can't be in a silo. It's education, experience and certifications. But the value I think they bring is it tests for practical application. Most of these certifications are not just tests. They want to know how you can apply all this knowledge that you've learned in real life. And if you can demonstrate that, you're awarded the certification. And what I value about certifications is that they require you to stay relevant. If you're going to maintain this certification, then you must renew every 3 to 5 years because they want to see relevancy. And that's something that degrees, they don't do. No one says you got to renew that EDD degree, Dr. Rob, and show that you're still smart. But certifications do. So I think they have such a high value. You just need to go after the right ones.
Yeah, I love that. And hearing, you know, from someone like you who has such in-depth experience in this, echo that sentiment that I know that we hold, at, you know, Darren and I, that it has to be combined, right? There's no singular path to this growth. So experience, education, formally, informally, certifications. You know, with that said, because of your experience in formal education, mm-hmm. specifically your dissertation and being in the room where it happens, which is where the experience comes from. I'm yes. super excited to hear you kind of untie that knot for me and tell me a little bit about the dissertation and the journey since you wrote it.
Yes, thank you. The dissertation is so near and dear to my heart. I joked with them prior to the start of this that I have to read it because I don't know it off the top of my head because it's so long. So my dissertation is titled, Getting to the Room Where It Happens, a Transformative, Qualitative, Collective Case Study of Black Women Holding and Pursuing Senior and Executive Leadership Roles. And scene.
Scene. Good, nice. Courtney, are you going to sing the title for us?
So, not when we're recording, Darren. Okay.
I want to be in the room where it happens. So, you know, Courtney, writing the dissertation, keep in mind that towards the end of it, it says of Black women holding and pursuing. At the time I wrote it, I was the Black woman pursuing a senior and executive role. I had a mid-level leadership role at the time I wrote the dissertation, but not a senior executive. So I was the pursuing. So I talked to two participant groups. I talked to Black women who were already in the room where it happened. They have the experience as a senior and executive leader. And then I talked to some Black women who did not have that experience, but they wanted it. They were me. And so it was personal. You know, I was writing notes like, wow, this is how they got there. Here are the challenges they face. Here's all the things. And then I asked the women who were pursuing, why are you pursuing this? All the things. And it's crazy how it happens. I graduated. I landed a senior executive role as a VP of Student Services. And so I got the job. I'm a senior executive. I'm on the same level as the CEO. I'm having all the operational, financial conversations. And that's the last job I resigned from to go work on my own. And now that I'm here, I say to myself, it wasn't all that it was hyped up to be for me. That's no dig at the company or the role. And we were doing great work with great people. I mean, just that climbing to be in the room. While I was in the room, I saw how the sausage was made. And you know what I thought? It's no magic that happens in that room. Mm-hmm. It's heavier. It's tough. You know, Simon Sinek says leaders eat last. Man, your leadership is selfless. It stretches you. You team first, customers first, people first, not you. They don't serve you. You really have to be for the company, for the mission. You have to collaborate. You have to be vulnerable. You have to be gracious. You have to forgive quickly. You have to teach. You have to teach patiently. So it was exhausting. We're not smarter than frontline people in that room. Sometimes we're just as afraid. We're just as scared. We're just as unsure. We're just as afraid. We just have a title and the authority to make the decision. We're biting our nails too, going, man, I hope that was the right call. I hope they can receive this. I hope they see how our heart is for them. And oftentimes they didn't, because they were not a part of the conversations. So, you know, now that I've been in the room, if I had it to do again, I wouldn't go so hard chasing it. Yeah. I would just kind of be content existing where I was, because I was leading there too. And I was doing good work there too. But what I did like was the authority it afforded me to move without boundaries, really. And to, I said the same thing as a frontline employee that I said as a VP, but people heard me differently from my title alone.
Yeah. That's so great. That's such a human story too, isn't it? It's like to get into that room. And then when you get there, it's not quite what I thought it would be. And needing to just then find that new story to go do.
Yeah.
One of the things that I hear you say that's kind of interesting to me too is when you get there, you're just as afraid, you're not any smarter, and how that affects people. Because part of it is I think you got to rise above all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like people kind of don't really appreciate what you're doing, and you're trying to balance a lot of needs. And if you couple that with also kind of being afraid and some imposter syndrome and things like that, sometimes it brings out the worst in people.
Yes.
So just, I don't know, could you say a little bit more about how do you as a consultant now advise those people in those rooms to rise above and their fears, essentially?
Oh, such a powerful question. I think I bring what you just said, the human part of it. And so in the month of May alone, I consulted with 6 stage 2 entrepreneurs. And I get to do it so realistically now. Mm-hmm. Oh man, it's such a blessing to me, because I don't have to feed egos. I don't speak to that part of them. I give them perspectives about their team that they don't even consider. Mm-hmm. So if someone reached out about wanting some workplace culture consultation and how do I build my culture from the ground up, and they were talking to me about a particular employee who might be having a hard time, I said, so let's frame everything we're going to talk about from her lens. What it must be like to be in her position under you at a time like this at your company. What do you think she's feeling? Fear, doubt, right? I said, so you got to speak to that. She doesn't want to hear in 6 months, this won't be an issue. It's really real for her now. So how do you give her the security that she needs? And he's like, we were on Zoom and I'd see him look up kind of like, I'm thinking. It was so simple, but so profound. Yeah. And so even though that employee wasn't on a call, I get to advocate from the standpoint of the front line all the time. And most people in the talent development space who know me professionally, they describe me as a champion for the front line. And really, I'm just a good perspective champion. Like if we were in a meeting and the three of us were a team, and maybe Courtney was speaking a lot and Darren wasn't speaking a whole lot, I'm going to observe that. And I'm going to advocate for Darren almost instantaneously and just go, Courtney, this is so great. Darren, I just want to make sure I'm holding space for you. Is there anything you want to say? So that's my consulting approach, is to humanize what the issue is and not make it $50 words when $5 words will do, not to make it lofty and impressive, but plain and relevant.
I just got to say, I really appreciate you putting me in the role of the person who didn't speak up, because that's not really the case. If anything, it's the other way around. But I like where you're going. Yes. I think, you know, while I've got the floor, that idea, that empathy idea is such a big piece of it, isn't it? And it's funny because it's not that people don't know. It's just that we all get caught up in our own things, and having that perspective of somebody else from the outside who can just help you in a really positive way, shift your focus to thinking about what it's got to be like for other people. It's just it's how you open up minds and how you open up doors and make things better.
Yes.
Over and over again. Right.
Yeah. And you know, Darren, I wanted to say to that was when I was in a senior executive role, it's trippy because, you know, you're the boss. You have all this authority. I had these four directors that reported up to me. I was over the key operations at this organization, and I knew I was doing meaningful work. And at the same time, I thought I'm not adding any value because they are so much closer to the product. They are so much closer to the customer. I was so far removed, and that makes me feel just uninformed. And so they would often say, you're adding so much value. And I would say, I'm not really looking for you to like stroke my ego here or give me fluff. I said, I'm genuinely struggling. I don't know. And, you know, because I didn't know how to function at that level. I hadn't been in the senior executive role before. And I'm used to rolling up my sleeves saying, Courtney, what we got? Let's do it. Let's get on a Zoom. Let's share your screen. Let's get in Google Doc. Let's both type. They don't, at that level, they don't need you to be in the Google Doc typing. They need you passing things along and approving things and making their way smooth. So it took me a while even to find my groove. So now I just use all that know-how from higher ed, banking, healthcare, and every role. And that's the lens I advise CEOs of right now. And it is working. And it's so simple and profound, but it is helping.
You know, when you come into the space, you're coming in from a perspective of such grand experience, right? Education, certification, and experience, right?
Yeah.
We have a lot of, I know, people that I work with and that listen to this podcast that often are in exactly what you just articulated, that space where they feel in the peripheral of the value that organization heads actually represent, especially when it's talent development. If you don't have a senior top leader, CEO, founder, president that fundamentally believes, not pretends because they read it's important and it's a big industry standard, but fundamentally believes that people development is the core of an organization's growth potential, how would you coach someone who's in that peripheral, whether they're in the room or just outside the door, to talk to those leaders who maybe don't fundamentally believe in the value?
Courtney, I instantly thought of the very famous Henry Ford quote that says, what if we train our employees and they leave? And what if you don't and they stay? So that's
signature on my email for 12 years.
You see, it's powerful, right? I mean, so that's the lens I would coach them from. I would say, listen, I know that it is, again, Darren, I'm thinking of that empathy we just talked about. I would say, I know that it's time consuming to do it. I know that it takes them away from the work, but let's talk about what happens if they're not equipped to be productive and efficient and functional in your department. And so often I give them like one statistic or something. I'll say, you know, top three reasons people quit their jobs is a lack of training. And so I know you want to retain this employee. Look how long it took you to hire them. Look how much money you've spent hiring them. Now we have to invest. So let's figure out what that looks like, because I want you to get everything you can get out of this employee, but it starts with us making sure they are equipped to succeed. So I would speak from the beneficial standpoint of having them train.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah.
I have a quote for here for you to respond to.
Okay.
All right, here we go. Life for me ain't been no crystal stair.
That's so good.
Yeah, that's I believe that's Langston Hughes. It was something that you had referenced in this really terrific article. I mean, I'm trying to remember right now because I don't have it in front of me, but you're like one of the women to watch in corporate training and things like that in 2024. And in this great article, you had mentioned that. I think it was kind of about growing up a little bit and your experiences.
Yeah. Thank you for that. That is a Langston Hughes quote from a poem. And I read it at a commencement address I did to some students, and I almost got choked up because life for me hasn't been a crystal stair professionally. So I was very young in management. My first paid management role, I was maybe 26, 27. And I was on a team full of trainers who were old enough to be my parents. And we're talking about letters behind my name. I had nothing. I had a bachelor's of general studies degree with a major in arts and humanities and a minor in behavioral sciences. And that's it. And all I had was hunger. Oh man, I had hunger. The way I even landed that job was ambition and hunger. They were not hiring. I emailed the CEO on a whim. I said, my name is Michelle Robertson, and I'm interested in becoming a corporate trainer. And I was a student in one of your company's classes. And that's exactly what I want to do. Do you have an internship? Can I get an internship? That man did not have an internship at all. He made one just for me. He was impressed with my hunger. And so I landed the job. And here's where it's not been a crystal stare. Who's this kid who has never worked as a corporate trainer? So it was so much ageism. And all this making fun of. And to this day, I despise classes about generational differences. And everybody wants that topic. Oh, my gosh. And I despise it because I've rarely seen it done well. I've seen it done well once. And this trainer just simply said, you know, you talk about millennials, you talk about Gen Z. And he looks at the class and he goes, who raised them? It's you. So when you talk about they grew up with an iPad in their hands, you put the iPad there.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't choose late 80s to be born. You know, I learned PowerPoint in third grade. But that's just what the curriculum was, you know, all those things. And so I dealt with a lot of ageism. It made me super uncomfortable because the correlation they were making was because you're young, you can't possibly know more than me. You can't possibly know enough to be effective. You can't possibly have anything of experience to tout to be effective in your corporate training classes. And yet I was killing it in the classroom. The evaluations were great. I even kept a love file for me in Outlook that anytime I got praise via email from somebody, I put it in my love file because that imposter syndrome, you know, you either nurse it or you have to talk yourself out of it. And that love file was my way of being like, you're worthy, you're credible, you're good. Yeah, you're only 26, but you got it. And even the way I became a manager, the CEO, same CEO who liked my hunger, he was at a company meeting and he said, this is a really good company. If you want to grow here, you can grow here. I sent him a meeting, a email over the Christmas break. And I said, I heard what you said about growing. I would really love to be a supervisor one day. He gave me my first paid leadership role. Now I'm the kid over those trainers. And that was trippy. Coworker turned supervisor. And then I'm the youngest on the team. So it wasn't always glorious. It felt isolating being coworker turned supervisor, being the youngest. Certainly I've always been either the only or the few who look like me in a room. And from K through doctorate, always, every school, every class, everything. So sometimes that's trippy and that feels like I have to represent everybody who looks like me in a room. So that feels heavy. Sometimes it is microaggressions, which I'm learning are not really micro. I facilitated a Black History Month panel this year with some students from Baylor University. And one of the, as the moderator, I asked a question about microaggressions. And this one guy says, no, Dr. Rob, not micro. A slap is a slap. If you slap me, it's a slap. It's an aggression. I was like, oh, that's so good. So I've certainly had my share of micro, macro aggressions, being misunderstood, trying to fight against Black women stereotypes, like the angry Black woman because I'm direct. Some people see direct as aggression or having an attitude if I'm quiet. And I'm just like, there's no attitude. I'm just quiet. So it's been exhausting sometimes navigating these spaces or and the final challenge I'll talk about. So ageism, being a minority, but also not really fitting corporate molds. I don't always like the corporate speak, circle back, rounding, manage up. And I'd be like, okay, come.
You shouldn't, right? I mean, well, it's just jargon.
It's jargon, but it's so isolating. If you don't speak like that, then you're not polished. If you don't dress like them, you're not polished. If your hair is not a certain way, you know, the fact that California had to pass the Crown Act so that there's not discrimination against natural hairstyles like dreadlocks and all of that every time there's an employment related law, I tell people if it's a law, it's because it was an issue. You know, so in places where, like, a good HR friend of mine would say to you, Darren, she would say, imagine if you were bald and someone said, we don't accept your bald head. And you're like, you're telling me my natural lack of growing hair is an issue because you don't look polished. So I've also had to fight against when I don't code switch, when I don't perform in front of the boss because it's the boss. So sometimes if I didn't shake in my boots when the boss came, I've had coworkers kind of nudge me like, this is career suicide. You better act and press. And I'm thinking, but I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted with performing and using the performance language. And so sometimes I didn't always get the stretch projects or the stretch assignments because I didn't look like a team player or my practicality was seen as challenging. And I was just trying to make it realistic and practical. So those are the things that didn't feel like a crystal stair for me, but still I persist because boy, do I have a hunger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing all that. And the ageism stuff, just to kind of go back and recap a couple of things there, like that always drives me nuts because I'm so old now that what I realize is, to me, you can't say that, oh, this generation is like this and this generation is like that, as much as you can say, no, you just change as you get older. I know for sure I'm so different now than I was when I was 20. I just care about different things. And they're the same freaking things that my parents and grandparents cared about when they were that age. It's like the problem is I'm just super predictable in terms of things I care about because every generation has been the same way. In terms of being in that room and moving forward, so I had this quote here from you, which is basically just what you said, that feeling responsible to represent all Black people because you were the only Black person in the decision-making room.
Yes.
I mean, what words of wisdom do you have for people and where you think we're headed? I mean, we're at another kind of crazy inflection point with what work is going to be like and how people connect in all kinds of ways, but in my head, I was just thinking about AI, like everything's changing, but politically in the country too, there's all kinds of crazy things.
Yeah.
But you know, yeah, getting to the room where it happens. I don't know. What do you want people to know?
Stop stereotyping. Just see everybody individually. And this is what I teach when I'm doing I don't do a whole lot of diversity training, even though I get requests for it all the time. And I don't do a whole lot because my diversity training is very, I have singular interests. I'm interested in all things Black women. I cannot represent every religion, every sexuality, the veteran status that I'm an ally. I just don't know enough to do holistic diversity training. And I like that I don't. So I've turned down paid gigs to say, if you need a holistic something, that's not me, but here's who I can refer you to. If you want to talk specifically this intersection of woman and Black, I got you all day. And so what I say all that, Darren, to say the advice I would give is to stop the stereotypes. And here's how you know you're stereotyping. If you start a sentence off with all baby boomers are, you just lied because you've not met every single baby boomer in the world. So whatever you're about to say out your mouth is a downright lie. What's the truth then, Michelle? They should say the baby boomers I've worked with have been. I'm fine with that every day, all day. So if we would stop the stereotypes. So if Courtney was in the room and she was the only white female in the room, I need to stop assuming she can speak for everybody with this intersection of white and woman. If that's how she identifies, I have the responsibility of not saying, well, you know, that's how white women are. No, I could say that's how Courtney is in this meeting today. And then I have to have the courage to give her grace for tomorrow. Because what if she's not like that all the time? And a lot of people don't just have the energy to do that. So anything, and here's how prevalent it is. When a child turns 2 years old, what do we typically call what do we call that era?
Toddler.
Yeah.
Or there's a phrase for it. They call it the
terrible twos.
Terrible twos. Oh, yeah. Terrible twos. I have a couple of them there.
You see? That's a stereotype.
Yeah.
So you're saying every single two-year-old in the entire world is going to be terrible from 2 to 3 years old. And that's a lie, because you have not met every single two. You even show up to the birthday party saying that, hey, girl, I got a gift. Whoop, 2 years old. Whoop, you better watch out. It's going to be a tough year. And the poor mom and dad are probably like, what? And then we do it with people who wear glasses. If you wear glasses, you must be smart. What? Yeah. I know all the dumb people who wear glasses. Just stop it and just see people individually. So if I am the minority in the room and race comes up, which it always does, when something about minorities come up, you know, there's this weird look down at me at the table. And I'm just like, no, I can only speak about my lived experiences. And so, you know, Darren, I say to that is that when there's an injustice that happens in the world, like the murder of George Floyd, and that kind of changed the appetite for us talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion, I would tell my ally friends during that season, a man being murdered should bother you as much as it bothers me. Don't go to lunch with me to go, as a Black woman, how do you feel? I would ask Courtney, how do you feel? Yeah. You know, until it bothers all of us, we will stop isolating and go, well, if somebody dies who looks like Michelle, this must be tough for her. I want it to be tough for Darren. I want it to be tough for Courtney. So if we do that in very small ways, just your lived experience is real. I cannot stop you from having the experience. But what I can encourage people to do is just to see people individually. So even if all men, if I had a bad experience with all men, when I meet Darren for the first time, I need to see him apart, apart from that hurt. Or I'm just going to loop him in and go, oh, you're a guy. You're going to be just like the rest of them. If we started seeing people individually, I think we'd have better working relationships with people.
That's it. That is so beautifully said. Thank you. It's the self-awareness and catching yourself, because the research shows if you have any sort of stereotype in your head, it's like, it's going to show up if you don't, whether you want to or not. It's what you do about it.
Yes.
You have to have that awareness to do it, but it also makes me think that it's that idea. I think it was, who wrote The Great Gatsby?
I know it when I hear it.
Yeah. All of a sudden it's just completely out of my head. But it's that idea that like a really great intellect, you can hold like simultaneous contradictory ideas in your head at the same time.
Yes.
And so like if I'm working, you know, we teach working with different cultures class, like international cultures. Mm-hmm. And there are some differences, you know, if you're working in France, for example, people are very direct in giving feedback, much more so than in the US, where we put a big premium on self-esteem. And so we're kind of very careful, but they're not as direct at communication. There's more between the lines. We're super direct. So there's like these differences. But the problem is if I think, well, that sums up everything. It's like you both respect that there is culture, and the person in front of you is not the culture. That's a person. Like it's both things happen. You have to be able to kind of hold both of it in your head. Otherwise, I think you can almost disrespect people too by not recognizing their culture.
Oh, that's good. I was looking for like a Zoom reaction and just was like, how do I drop a heart here? So this is what I have for you. That was so beautifully said.
Yeah.
That's going to live rent-free in my head.
You made my day. You really did.
Wow.
By the way, it's Fitzgerald.
That's it. It's Fitzgerald. God dang it. I should have known that.
And speaking of books, with a minute or so we've got left, a question, Dr. Michelle, is what book have you read recently? It doesn't have to be the most recent one. Recently, that we all need to read if we haven't.
Doom, doom, doom. I'm looking, Courtney, on my bookshelf here.
Right there. Open book test.
Okay. Open book test. Okay. Can I say a book that I believe we all should read, but I haven't read it yet?
Yeah.
Okay. It is the book I'm most excited about is ATD's Consultant Handbook.
Oh, nice.
It's several authors. A lot of them were at the ATD International Conference that took place last month in New Orleans, Louisiana. And it's just because of the season I'm in my life right now. But I think if you work even internally for an organization in a learning or an HR capacity, just from me flipping through this book, and I went to several training sessions with these authors, there is something in internal consultants and external consultants can glean from this, from, I think, of people who work in talent development, it'll stop you from being order takers to just, if somebody gives you a deliverable that they want training, it's how to do a thorough needs assessment, how to ask the right questions, how to follow up with your clients. And that's also my secret to career success, working internally for companies. Treat everybody like a client. You will have the best professional reputation and the best relationships if you operate it like you were a solopreneur within the walls of the company you work for. And this is the book that can help you with that.
That's really you probably weren't ready for this, but we each have our own signature question. So I got a follow-up one here for you, which is, we've gotten to learn some things about you, our listeners have in this call. What's something about you that maybe not a lot of people know that some people might find a little surprising? There you go. That's it.
I'm going to probably surprise myself with this. And that is, I actually really like classical and jazz music more than I know myself. I find that it reduces anxiety for me.
Yeah.
It makes, I love to intricately listen to all the instruments. I used to play the cello way back in the day and I didn't maintain it, but it sits on display in my living room right now. I got it for a Valentine's Day gift from my husband, but I love classical and jazz music. I admire the artistry. Yeah. I love a good trumpet and a saxophone, but I love the cello and the violin.
Yeah.
I don't listen often, but when I do, I'm always beating myself up about why don't I listen to that more?
Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
That's I mean, anxiety reducer for sure. Classical. Yes. Well, I love that you just had an epiphany about yourself that you didn't even know 40 minutes ago. This was fun. I mean, I will tell you, this is probably one of our more quote heavy podcast, and I loved it. I love a good quote. So we'll make sure those and the books we referenced are in the show notes. We talked a lot about, you know, the benefits of certifications versus experience and education. And I loved your idea of coming up with criteria as an individual for yourself, what that looks like. Great hearing about your dissertation, the room where it happens. We'll make sure everyone has access to read more about that. And something else, the love file. You mentioned, I am storing that away. I'm going to create a love file for myself and maybe our facilitators too, to remind them of the value they get to bring.
Yes.
So thank you so much. Tell our listeners where they can read more about you, get a hold of you if they want to talk. Tell us about how to reach you.
Yes. So please visit my website, which is www.drmichellerobb.com. That's Michelle with an E and not an I. And you can also find me on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn as Dr. Michelle Robertson. I also post professionally on TikTok. I use the same handles at Dr. Michelle Robb. So sometimes you're getting a short, funny, but direct and serious video about some topic or another. So LinkedIn, though, is my preference. I live on LinkedIn. I post a lot of longer, valuable things on LinkedIn. Don't be a stranger. Hit the follow button, connect, send me a message. I love people. All people. So I am just excited to connect with you, whoever you are.
Dr. Robb?
Yes.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
To our listeners, if you enjoyed the show, please hit like and subscribe. And until the next episode, remember to stay curious and keep learning.